You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Well, France has been in Mali for at least 5 years. Why are they so invested in the Sahel region?
One reason is what you might call the post-colonial legacy. And the post-colonial legacy has two separate strands, although they're interwoven. On the one hand, Mali, as well as the other Sahel countries, are former French colonies. And France has bilateral relationships with them, including a bilateral defense treaty with the Malians, and retains fairly extensive diplomatic ties with all of the Sahel countries, Mali in particular. And part of that is due to the second strand, which is its economic interests. France has been exploiting those colonies in the post-colonial era for their minerals. And, for example, Niger has the fourth largest reserves of uranium in the world, and that happens to be under mostly French control. And they feel a little bit besieged by the growing presence of Chinese resource of extractive enterprises, which have now started to compete with the French in the Sahel. And so obviously enough, they have a material interest in keeping their relationship with these countries as good as possible. And that can be very fraught because, you know, needless to say, the colonial experience was not viewed favorably by many of the local people. And there still are, some negative feelings about the French. And so the French have to actually walk fairly delicately when it comes to any intervention in these countries. But I should point out that the intervention in Mali and elsewhere is covered by two UN resolutions, both from 2013. One which commits the French to something that was known then as Operation Serval, named after the medium-sized African cat, which was a military operation to try to clean up and rout Islamic State in the Sahel militants from northeastern Mali. And that came within a larger resolution which committed a UN Blue Helmet peacekeeping force, now numbering 15,000 people, to try to promote peace in the region because, and here's the final strand, these are countries with extensive pre-modern tribal traditions. The tribes fight amongst themselves. Some are Muslims, some are not. Some are Tuareg, some are Dalton, as they're called. And those tribal divisions precede modernity, and they fight over resources. They fight over arable land, of which there's very little. They fight over water, they fight over grazing rights. And so there's that mix that serves as the backdrop to the entrance of the Islamic State in the Sahel. And that's the second large piece. So the first piece is France's relationship with the region, and Mali in particular. And then the second one is the presence of the Islamic State in the Sahel, and that is a consequence of the demise of Gaddafi in Libya, which the French took a leading role in ushering in, the death of Gaddafi. Well, when Gaddafi was ousted, a lot of his weapons and whatnot traveled south, courtesy of the Tuareg nomads, who went into Niger, went into Mali with their weapons, with the interest of overthrowing the central governments of each. And a lot of these guys became very experienced fighters as a result of the fight against Gaddafi's forces. And so they were an imminent threat to the poorly, poorly equipped and trained armies of particularly Mali and Niger. But also Chad is in the mix, Mauritania is in the mix, and Burkina Faso is in the mix. Those are the five so-called G5, these G5 Sahel countries. And so it was the downfall of Gaddafi that opened the doors to the Islamic State's entrance into the Sahel. And but they brought weapons with them, fairly sophisticated weapons, as it turns out, as well as the tactics that they learned, fighting in Libya. France holds some responsibility for that because they, along with Italy, were the leading foreign or extra-regional powers that intervened in Libya to promote regime change. So they bear some responsibility for the unintended consequences that spilled over in the region to the south. So what you've got is that long-standing interest, again, with its structural underpinning of economic exploitation and the long diplomatic ties. And then you have the UN resolutions, which justify the French presence. And then you have the Islamic State. Now, interestingly, there are non-Islamicist rebel groups in Mali. There's a whole bunch of them, crossing tribal affiliations and the like. And a peace treaty was brokered in August 2015 between all the non-Islamicist groups and the central government, which is still an interim government backed by France. That peace treaty has been honored sort of in the breach. It's not a very stable peace treaty. And the different groups that are in the non-Islamicist coalition fight amongst themselves all the time. So it's a very tenuous affair, and the French have 4,500 troops in the middle of this. I was looking at their force composition earlier today after you called, and it looks like they're really using this more as a training exercise mm-hmm. for various regiments than a concerted effort to eradicate the guerrilla forces from the north and the east of Mali. And I say that because it's a mixed bag. They got amphibious commandos. They've got, you know, paratroopers. They got special forces. They have a light armored brigade. French warfighting is based on maneuver and mobility. So they don't have heavy tanks. They do have some air cover, but the French like to fight light. And in the desert, that's probably the best way to go. And so I got a feeling that a lot of this is to rotate troops in and out so they get some blooding experience in a real combat environment. But the main reason I say that is because clearly there's no military solution anytime soon because of all those tribal differences and resource war fighting, and because the central government in Mali is detested by certainly by Muslim Malians, but also by many of these other tribal groups. So I think the French are making the best of what they consider a bad situation. They can't seem to get other Western countries to put boots on the ground or to offer more than token logistical support. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and many people think, well, those are really small wars, insignificant wars. Actually, the Sahel, the conflict in the Sahel is the biggest conflict in Africa today, mm-hmm. by far. Again, you've got 15,000 UN peacekeepers that are trying to keep the peace between the Islamicists and the non-Islamist tribal groups and factions, as well as protect the central government. And then you have the French, you know, doing the hard yards of fighting the Islamicists. See, they're just focused in on the Islamicists in the so-called border region or the tri-corner region where Niger, Burkina Faso, and Mali all link. They all share a common border on the eastern side of the country. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the French have been taking hits. They've lost, I think it's 38 people since they committed to the battle in January of 2013. Again, there's no end in sight. And so then the question, I guess, is will the French public continue to support these, you know, post-colonial ventures in the measure that they have so far? Because right now, public opinion is very much supportive of these missions. This is, it's now called Operation Barhame, B-A-R-H-A-M-E, which replaced Operation Serval, which only lasted 1 year, while Barhame mm-hmm. now is into its sixth year. Mm-hmm. Excuse me, fifth year. And public opinion so far has been in favor of continuing the military presence. We'll see what happens with these deaths. It doesn't seem to have moved the needle when it comes to public opinion. Mm-hmm. And there's only one political party in France that opposes. And so, but other yep. than that, you know, most of the French public seems to be, you know, and you know, supporting these missions. Either because of historical ties, I believe there's about 150,000 Malians in France, living in France. And so there could be those type of ties. And then obviously enough, the fight against ISIS is important, even though it's metastasized into more regional subgroups. So this is the Sahel version, which again takes advantage of those tribal divisions in order to recruit and what have you. But therein lies the rub too. These are very impoverished countries, and that economic exploitation I was talking to you about earlier, that goes to France. You know, that isn't distributed in these countries. You know, income inequalities there are incredible. And so you've got a lot of unemployed young men in these various tribal regions outside of central government control, and they got nothing to do. There's no meaning to their lives. And so they make easy fodder for recruitment into armed groups, be they Islamic or not. And certainly, you know, some of them, again, go with traditional tribal affiliations, others with more modern variations on the theme, but, you know, this sort of this grinding poverty and economic disadvantage, that's not going to be solved anytime soon. And the French, quite frankly, don't seem to be, you know, as interested in you know, looking at the structural problems that lead to all these, you know, angry young men, you know, milling about, and more interested in suppressing the immediate threat to the central government posed by the Islamicists, and little else other than trying to continue business as usual.
Like you said, when we are talking about France wants to get more Western boots in the Sahel, President Macron has called for more allies to help the intervention in Sahel. Do you think more traditional allies like NATO or the US will comply to it?
I don't think the US will. I guess I should separate the US from the other NATO allies. Currently, the U.S. is providing intelligence, mostly drones, surveillance footage, for the French to take advantage of. Some other countries have provided airlift capability, you know, cargo planes and the like. But the United States right now, you know, I personally think is in a rather unfortunate moment in its history with this excuse for a president running the place, and they're withdrawing from their military commitments abroad. You know, they're drawing down slowly but surely, including in Afghanistan. But, you know, the American public is weary of these endless wars without resolution because they haven't won. And so the United States is in no mood to start putting in any significant number of troops. Sure, there'll be special operators. I mean, there's a whole, you know, Green Beret outfit that is dedicated to Central Africa. And so those boys will be over there because, you know, they want to see combat. They need the experience. But other than a very, very light or small footprint, you're not going to see the Americans get involved in a big way. Now, other former colonial powers, let's say the Belgians, the Germans, you know, they may look at this and look further south from the Sahel and realize that in places like Nigeria, you have serious problems of Islamic irredentism that need to be solved. I say Nigeria because that might drag the UK in, but certainly in what used to be the Belgian Congo, those sort of places, Kenya, again, another UK former colony, they've got serious problems. Al-Shabaab is on the East Coast, in sub-Saharan Africa, spanning, you know, from Somalia down into northern Kenya. And so it is possible that the French, seeing the American reluctance to get involved, will be able to press upon its European partners that they, too, have responsibility to keep this thing from spreading like an oil slick all across the region. And then there's one more remote possibility, much more remote possibility, but it cannot be discounted, which is getting the Chinese on board. The Chinese military is looking for things to do. You know, they feel they're a rising great power. They've established a huge military base in Djibouti, including a naval base, but also a land station. And they have economic interests now in Africa in a way they didn't have even 10 years ago. And those economic interests are going to be threatened by the spread, particularly of Islamist groups. And these are war-fighting groups. They're irregular, they're unconventional, but they're full war-fighting groups, and of course, they have economic ambitions as well. They could tax the Chinese, for example, in their mining enterprises in territory that they control. So it is possible that overtures might be made to the Chinese to get involved in places where they've heavily invested. Whether or not that would be successful, whether or not the Chinese would agree to any such thing, is a matter of conjecture, and I would say at this point the possibility is remote. But, you know, the more the Chinese put money into Africa, the more they have at stake. The more they have at stake, the more they may have an interest. And if that interest is welcomed rather than refused by Western countries, former colonial powers in particular, then maybe the Chinese will get involved. They're already involved in terms of protecting the sea lanes of communication. They're part of that sort of broad coalition of naval forces that are trying to engage in anti-piracy exercises and that sort of thing. So maybe that's the basis for future military involvement in the event that the threat cannot be handled by the French alone and no one else wants to get involved.
Do you think France will get bogged down in the Sahel like the Americans did in Afghanistan and Iraq?
Well, I think that we have to give the French one measure of credit when compared to the States. And as I said, not only is their warfighting style on land quite different, but the French learned the lessons of Indochina much better than the Americans did. The French learned the lessons of their colonial wars. And what they realize is a losing hand. So after Vietnam, the French realized, you know, we can't get bogged down in wars without end when the indigenous forces are basically aligned against us. And so better to cut bait and leave it for others to try to sort out. The Americans never learned the lessons of Vietnam. What they learned, perversely, was, oh, the media was against us, the hippies turned against us in the late 60s, all those pacifists, you know, ruined the whole thing. We could have bombed these guys into the Stone Age, but no one would let us do it. So instead of learning that when you go fight a guerrilla army on its own territory, if you can't defeat them in the first year, you'll never defeat them. See, I'm an old irregular warfare guy, so I'm like, you know, this is so obvious to anyone who's been involved in this sort of thing. If they don't get decisive victories immediately, it's over, okay? It's a bloodletting exercise. What is it? Mao called it in the first instance, death by a thousand cuts. You just keep on cutting the enemy until he starts getting weak because of loss of blood. And that's all you do. You never confront him directly. You always attack him from the side and behind. Never, you know, deal with him force on force. And just keep on cutting at him until he loses the will to fight. And that's what happened with the United States in Vietnam. The trouble is its military didn't learn any of the right lessons. The French have. The French are not stupid. And so they're looking at this now as we speak. Macron, in fact, has just ordered a review of the entire operation as a result of these deaths. So whether that's symbolic, whether that's going to be a whitewashing exercise, you know, remains to be seen. But his response is, you know, we need to look at what we're doing there, and we'll make recommendations based on whether or not we can secure support from our military partners and whether it's worth doing. Again, that's where the economic interests come in. And so we shall see, but I think that they're looking at this as the possibility of a desert version of Vietnam. And if that's the way their military commanders are starting to think, then it's very likely that they will withdraw at some point. What they're trying to do, and the guys who are taking the brunt of the casualties, are the armies of the G5. The Malian army is only 5,000 troopers. You know, that's not even a full Western-sized division of troops, and they're taking losses. They've lost 300 soldiers since September, and ambushes and whatnot. You know, they're even with the French support, they're still very poorly trained. And the whole idea was that eventually the French would train up the troops of Niger, Burkina Faso, Chad, etc., and they could take the fight to particularly the Islamists. And the French could draw down their troops so that they would just be advisors, and they would provide a lot of logistics and air support. But they haven't been able to do so, and the fighting in the last year has been worse than in the previous 2 years. So I don't think they're going to leave until they feel fairly confident that the local forces can hold their own against this enemy, which means they're going to have to kill a lot more Islamists between now and whenever that handover occurs, if they're ever going to do so. So in a way, they're stuck, you know, a bit in a, you know, in quicksand with, you know, they have an ability to get out at this point, but the consequences of them leaving may result in the fall of certainly the central government in Mali and possibly even the central government in Niger. And that's not an outcome that the French are willing to accept, nor for that matter their partners.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.